Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David. We're both back in the same city. How'd that happen?
Yeah. Gives us a little taste of traveling around and trying to – I don't know how the NHL players do it, honestly, Bruce. Of course, they're flying first class. They got their own plane, and like I'm flying – I'm in economy cramped into my seat. You know, landing in Toronto and changing planes, it's a freaking nightmare traveling, as far as I'm concerned. So, but nonetheless, it does give you some that they are going through this travel constantly. And it just turns your life on its head. When you're traveling around, I find, I don't know how you're back from a long holiday in Newfoundland. So.
Yeah, essentially I just changed time zones once, but it was a 3.5 hour switch. And that's pretty drastic. But I think between us, we probably put about the same number of air miles on that the Oilers did. They did 18,000 air miles on a road trip, but they're back in Edmonton, but the road trip isn't over yet. Now, you explain to me how they can do that. And they come back to Edmonton, and here they are finally sleeping in their own bed. And their next game is in Winnipeg, and they got to fly out to play it. Like, what is going on with that? It just puzzles me. Every other NHL team played their home opener like a week ago or more. And here Oilers are, after this huge road trip to Europe and the East Coast, come home, and then they have to fly like a day trip, 2,000-kilometer round trip to Winnipeg and back? It's nuts.
And they could easily be 0-3. I mean, you have to think that Todd McLellan and Peter Chiarelli in particular are cursing this turn of events because Matt, and it shows you, Bruce, like when the Oilers were 0-2, how quickly the heat is going to get turned up this year with this team. I mean, the level of exasperation for Todd McLellan, the level of exasperation for Chiarelli has been there for at least a year now, longer. But for the majority of fans wouldn't have batted an eye if Chiarelli had been fired last year. Mm-hmm. There was more support for the coach last year. Keep his job. But after those two losses, man, there was all kinds of people like enough, like get it done or get lost was essentially a message from Oilers fans for McLellan. And, and they could have easily lost that Rangers game too. I mean, it was a very close contest. I thought that Cam Talbot was really sharp in that game, super sharp in that game. And he and McDavid won them the game. So,
and they got a little lucky, you know. You won't hear me say this very often, but they got the benefit of the calls there in the third period when Garrison kind of hogtied the guy behind the net and the ref looked away and the fans booed. He was swinging at the puck and he kind of came down in the follow-through and grabbed the guy. I guess that's what the ref saw. And then the puck went down the ice maybe 10 seconds later. Yamamoto gets hogtied. It's like the Rangers said, well, if that's not a penalty, then this won't be either. But, of course, we've been on the other end of that call a few times where the other ref, for starters, sees it and calls it different. And then they score the winner on that power play. So it was a crucial turning point.
Bruce, let's go through. So we've had three games. We've had the preseason. We've had three games. We've had a little taste of the 2018-19 Edmonton Oilers. Let's go through each line. Let's, relatively quickly go through each line, defense pairing and the goaltending and say where we both think they're at now. I've actually, the first line hasn't scored much at even strength. You know, I think they have McDavid's got one and Nugent Hopkins have one at even strength each. Is that correct?
Yeah.
But they, to me, Bruce, they've been getting their scoring chances. And Ty Ratty, although he hasn't been getting many shots on net, he just has two shots for grade A chances so far. He has looked really good. I'm really impressed with his speed, actually. He looks like a faster player than he was last year. Maybe he is in better shape. He's controlling the puck well, making quick little smart plays. He just seems to really fit on that line. I like that line. And I hope that, there was already rumblings. Bob Stauffer of the Oilers tweeted out something about maybe Draisaitl back with McDavid. I'm thinking, oh, geez, we saw that movie all last year. Do we have to see it again? Mm-hmm. And so quickly, you're going to go back to, to plan failure from 2017-18. But I've liked that line. What's your take on it?
I've been real fine with that first line. I mean, Ty Ratty, Using the criteria, the automated criteria of natural stat trick, because we've got a little bit of catching up to do in our own project with our travels, they have Ty Ratty as having four high danger scoring chances, the most on the team.
Those are shots that he took?
No, those are high danger shots, like shots from a dangerous area. So
I've just counted two, Bruce. So yeah. And I'm caught up now. So I don't know.
Okay. Well, then
maybe they count missed shots. Bruce, they count missed shots.
Yeah, I think they count where the shot comes from.
And so I don't count. They got to hit the net. But you can't score, man.
Yeah. Anyway, he got one assist on the McDavid goal, and he got one unofficial assist on the Nugent Hopkins goal, where it was his good play along the boards and headman pass to McDavid that set up the three-man passing play that followed. So he's been on the ice for two goals, four, none against in about 45 minutes action. Can't argue with that. Like people saying, well, he's only got 1 point, better move him along. But hey, if the Oilers are winning his share of the game by, you know, 2.5 goals per 60, then he's doing his job. And they've been, that line I think has been pretty effective by and large.
So the tentative title of this podcast was Ty Ratty on the Oilers power play. But just as we were going to air here, Ryan Rashog of TSN clarified an earlier tweet that he had made and said that although he had had Ratty practicing with the top power play unit and the Twitter sphere, social media was, you know, finally everyone saying, I'm sure that, you know, happiness, of course, finally you get a right shot on that top power play unit. You get Ty Ratty, Nugent Hopkins, and McDavid on the top unit. So when the power play's over, you can go right back to them if you need to. You don't have to play the fourth line, which is essentially what the Oilers are relegated to doing because of their screwy power play combinations. Those are the only fresh players. That's the only fresh line. Or they can put out a combo line, I guess, of players who aren't used to playing together. So everyone was excited about that. And then Rashog clarified it and said, no, they were just practicing to defend Winnipeg's power play, which of course rationally has a right shot on the left circle where he can get off that great off wing shot that really makes a power play hum on the Oilers power play where you don't see any of them ever because it's a screwed up setup. I don't care what anybody says.
Well, I mean, it's every aspect of modern power play stick theory has sticks in shooting positions on their off wings and even off points where they can quickly fire off one-time shots on cross-ice passes. And the Oilers will only have that on one side of the ice, and that's assuming they have the cross-ice passes coming from the other side of the ice where it's coming off the forehand of the passer. So it's not, when you have two offside sticks, a lefty to a righty, they can keep the puck right outside of the reach of the defenseman because they're both outside of the arc of the guy's stick. And with all lefties, or crazily, I mean, this is the part that slays me, all righties on the second unit, right? I mean, people talk about, well, Detroit used to have a power play that was really good with all lefties. Well, guess what? The whole team, that was all they had, so they had to make a go of it. But when you have a second unit that's all righties, and your first unit is all lefties, and you can't find a recipe to kind of switch one or two of those guys from one power play to the other. It's nuts. It is nuts.
It's nuts. Okay, let's go to the second line. The second line. You know, we agree with each other a lot, Bruce, in this, but fortunately we disagree with the Oilers a lot. So there is a lot of disagreeableness. It's just not you and I usually disagree into it sometimes, but usually it's just us disagreeing with something with the team. Okay, the second line, we have Leon Draisaitl, Kaori Yamamoto, and sorry for kind of chuckling there at his name, and then Milan Lucic. So, Bruce, my take is that Yamamoto is rapidly earning himself a demotion to the AHL. He's doing really next to nothing. He's looking over his head. He looks worse than he did, I think, last year at this same time. And this is after, again, a strong preseason. But he just he has got to make plays. He's a little tiny guy whose game is skill, speed, making plays. He is not making plays. He has one scoring chance shot in three games and on net, and that is not going to cut it. He's going to be, I mean, I've liked Puljujärvi. I've liked the thinking of Puljujärvi on the third line, but move up Puljujärvi. As for Lucic, the number of plays that miss passes that he makes, missing the net with shots, I still see him as a third line player, but I have been impressed with his hustling. He's been hustling harder. He's been hitting, and he's been playing a decent kind of Milan Lucic game. I don't really have any complaints, except I don't think his skill level is amenable to a second line position anymore. I think he should be a third line guy. And Draisaitl, he's made some god awful defensive gaffes that have cost goals. And I surprisingly, Bruce, I blame the coach. You might be shocked to hear that, but I just think this switching him back and forth between center and wing, he plays like a wing when he's playing center. He's got to play like a center, which is the heart, the anchor of the defense. And you're not on the wrong side of the puck. If he's going to be a big Sam Gagne, Bruce, this is a disaster for the Edmonton Oilers. If Leon Draisaitl is on the wrong side of the puck constantly, as he has been in the first three games in the defensive zone, this is an unmitigated disaster for the Oilers. And he's got to figure this out, and McClellan's got to figure this out. Keep him at center on his own line so he can figure it out. And give him some better wingers. Get rid of Yamamoto. Put Puljujärvi up there. And frankly, I would put Lucic on the third line and put Tobias Rieder on the other wing. There you have it.
Yeah, well, agreed on the Draisaitl problems behind his own blue line. And just getting the kind of swooping around, getting sucked out of position a little bit too easily. That very first goal in the first minute of the season in Gothenburg is one that comes to mind. But also last game, the one they allowed to the Rangers, where he and Lucic and McDavid were out there together, and it was like the Oilers had four right wingers on the ice and one other player. And they made one pass right across, they made two passes right across the Royal Road there and back again. And the guy wound up with like a huge gaping 6x4 to put it home, right? To manage that.
What do they call that when you get all the players on the one side of the ice there now? It's the new name. Swarm or the Swamp. But there's a new name this year.
Oh, is there? Okay. Well, that one, I would call it the Disaster, but that was on that play at least. And Leon's capable of playing better defense than he's shown. He's just got to step it up a bit and get his head into it. As for his wingers, man, Lucic, like I agree, he's busting his ass. He's laying on the body. He had 9 hits in New York. But he handles the puck like a grenade with the pin pulled. I don't know what's wrong with him. Like, he's got the yips and he's still got them. Like, I was hoping this summer he might get past that. But just so many bobbles. The puck hits a stick and it bounces off like it's got an anti-magnet in it or something. And then he fumbles away and he either coughs it up or he dumps it to nowhere. But there's none of this sort of one touch to a teammate in a better position. And he used to be a pretty good passer. Like, I just don't understand that part of his game seems to have deserted him.
The game's gotten faster and he's gotten older. So, like, we've seen this. This isn't new, okay? We saw this to some degree his first year. We saw it much of last year. This isn't new. It's not going away. I just think he's a third-line winger. And the quicker McClellan realizes that, the better it is for the Oilers. And Lucic, he's got to probably do a sell job on Lucic. Like, you can really help us on the third line by, playing a tough forechecking game, which is true, which is – David Backes is third line in Boston.
Mm-hmm. And they're overpaying him, but he's filling a role there. Now, as for Yamamoto, I saw a couple positive signs in the more recent games towards the end of the game, but a lot of too much of every game he's been basically invisible, including one really bad back check on a critical goal against in Boston that you pointed out. But he's starting to dart a little bit, like he's a darter. He's got to dart into the holes. He's going to move the puck quick. He's got to, take advantage of his small size and his speed and quickness to just be there and get the play done before the other team even knows he's been there. And he did in the New York game critically draw 2 penalties in the third period, including the one that set up the game-winning goal. And that's a skill that has value now, whether that's a one-game thing or whatever. There's some positive signs, but as a trio, that line really has not meshed.
No, and they didn't mesh in the preseason. And, honestly, I didn't have a whole ton of expectation that they would mesh, because I saw Milan Lucic play all last year, and and it with didn't
the pin out of the grenade. Yes.
Yeah. And every center he was with, you know, it just wasn't meshing. It wasn't meshing with McDavid. It didn't mesh with Draisaitl. You know, he needs a different, he needs about 2 or 3 minutes less ice time a game. He needs a different role. And, you know, the coaches, he loves those veterans though. And he will stick with those veterans in key spots till the cow comes home and he'll live and die with it. Okay. The third line, I've liked the third line. I thought Puljujärvi's had like up and down moments, moments when he's looked really good. And then moments where he's looked terrible, kind of falling down and playing without confidence. Both Yamamoto and Puljujärvi look to me like they're again playing without confidence, which is a, you know, that's a very difficult aspect of the game to build up in a young player. And but I've liked that line. I thought they looked good, very good at different times with Strom. And so they've changed the winger there, right? They've had Kajula and Kyra at different times.
Yeah, the second and third games it was Kajula with Strom and Puljujärvi, and that was a more effective line, especially in New York. They had a very good game.
Yeah.
And, you know, they played like 10, 11 minutes, and the Rangers never had one shot on net while they were out there. Like, they had the puck. They were generating, you know, not goals, obviously, but at least puck was going in the right direction, and they were doing absolutely nothing that was hurting the Oilers. And the concern there is that maybe the defensive coverage is not that strong. Kajula is a very erratic defensive player, as you know, but in New York, he was good. And he's a young guy, too, you know, and a lot of fans seem to have given up on this player.
I think it's really ridiculous.
I'm really disappointed in the degree of the how down, how many people are on this young guy. He's played 2 years in the league. I mean,
I think it's ridiculous, too.
Player. And, I mean, if he doesn't get better, then sure, he'll be gone. But 2 years in the league, and, I mean, he got 13 goals last year, which is more than any other winger on the team. I mean, it's not a great number, obviously. But when he got singled out as being particularly incompetent, and I'm sort of looking, well, you know, our whole wings is kind of a weak area, but to lay it all on one guy or whatever, it doesn't seem quite fair. Anyway, he played a very gutsy game in Boston in which he did hammer that biting tongue here guy, David Backes, who's had it coming for years. That guy has just been a miserable pain in the side for the Oilers. I remember going to games. I went to a game with you once back when the Journal had a box and the Blues beat the Oilers 7-2. It was Devin Dubnyk's first career start, just to pin it on a timeline. And Backes and company, they were just pushing the Oilers around for fun. Went to another game where the Blues beat the Oilers 6-0. Same thing, you know, the guy would just, he'd just be decking guys left and right. Nobody would ever stand up to him. And here's little Drake Kajula, 5'10", 176 pounds, like 5 inches shorter, 40 pounds lighter. Not only does he crunch Backes with a great hit, but they have a big, long sort of battle between the two of them. And Kajula gave every bit as good as he got in that. And actually, the Oilers deserved the power play because it was Backes who lost his composure and had the two-handed slash that he got away with. And, I mean, to me, I mean, you can look at that and say, well, it has no – it's always gritty. It has nothing to do with the hockey game. Well, I'm sorry. To me, that's hockey. I mean, I kind of love some of that.
Of course it's hockey. Personal. Hockey is about aggression.
And you gotta have some gutsiness on your team somewhere in your lineup, and that's why they talk about these energy players that all the teams seem to want to have one or two of those guys. And if that's all that he's going to be, I mean, maybe he's he maybe not like his contract, but if he's a third or fourth line player and chips in a little bit of offense, I mean, no points is not good enough. But let's see what we got here before we write the guy off.
I'm guessing there might be a huge overlap between the people who hate Chris Russell and hate Kajula. I don't get it. Like, I don't get it at all. Like, as you say, he scored 13 goals last year, the most of any Oilers winger. He's a fast, feisty player. He's got his problems defensively. Let's see how he does this year, though.
Penalty killer. So you got to solve that and either get him off of there or else teach him how to kill penalties. One of the two.
That's the coach. Like, the coach shouldn't have him out there killing penalties. It's not his fault that he can't do it. And he can't do it. Like, I've seen enough. Don't do it. But again, that isn't his fault. And so, yeah, he's fast. He's offensive. He can score some goals. He can play in today's NHL game. And the Oilers don't have a ton of wingers who can play in today's fast NHL games. So stick with him. Now, the fourth line, Bruce, like, honestly, I don't know why Zach Cassian and Kyle Brodziak are in the lineup. I've not seen anything, and this might not even be too bold a statement. I don't think I've seen anything from either of them which merits them playing in the NHL this year. They should bench both of them and keep them bench for a while, as far as I'm concerned. They both look slow behind the play, not able to make plays, past their best before dates, whatever it is. They've got to figure out a way to help their team. When Tobias Rieder, on the other hand, I've really liked. He can skate. He doesn't have great vision. You can see that. But he really hustles and gets his nose in there and has some skill, just enough skill to maybe step up onto a third line. So I would go with him and Chiasson and Kyra and forget those other two guys for now.
Well, and in truth, I mean, both of Brodziak and Cassian have been benched already, three games into the season. They both spent one game in the press box. And judging from today's line combination at practice, which was the exact same that played in New York, Cassian may stay there. And that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's fine. Like, I saw nothing out of Cassian in the first two games. A little bit, he dialed it up a little bit against Boston. But in a game where you had guys like Kyra and Kajula, you know, really, really mixing it up, and Cassian, I mean, what's he there for if not for that? And so... I'm not a huge fan of this player, as you know, so I'm worried about my own bias, but I'm not seeing much out of him.
I am a fan of Cassian, so we're balanced that way.
Kara, I haven't seen a whole lot out of to this point either, and that, you know, the whole fourth line. I thought, you know, Brodziak had a better game against New York. Like, he really stunk in the first game, and the first line got murdered in the first game. They were minus two. And also Brodziak and Cassian gave up a power play goal in seconds. They were like literally, they lost the faceoff, lost the shooting lanes, and the puck was in the net. So that was rough. I thought Brodziak was quite a lot better in New York, which is to say he was just sort of nothing. He was sort of level as opposed to being a big liability. He was just a guy, right?
And so he's too slow. He's Bruce. He is too slow. Like,
the word, isn't it?
Yeah. When I see him out there, I'm not really that familiar with him on the ice yet. Like, what he looks like, what he skates like. Like, I can recognize most players in a microsecond, right? Because we've seen them for years. Right. So it takes me a second to think, who is that? And then I see, oh, he's a step behind the play. And I think, oh, that's you again, Brodziak. I wish he was doing better. I'd like to love to cheer for him. He was a good player in his time, but they've replaced Mark Letestu with Mark Letestu. At least they don't have him on the power play so far. So, Bruce, the defense, one really bright spot that I'm finding, especially as the games have progressed, has been Adam Larson and Oscar Klefbom. I think that Oscar Klefbom has been fantastic. And you know, I criticized him a lot last year for his glaring defensive mistakes, but he's really starting to move well on the ice, move the puck well, defend well, looked like the defenseman who was kind of rounding into this really kind of interesting, possibly number one, dare I say, defenseman at the NHL level after the 2017 playoffs, in the 27 playoffs when he was so strong. We didn't see that guy at all last year, probably because of injuries. We've seen him again the last couple of games, and I found it very encouraging. And I've also felt that Adam Larson has stepped up in a similar way. They haven't been perfect, but they have been they've been looking very good.
Yeah, at least they're a top four pair. Whether they're a top pair, I don't know. One area where they score huge points for me was their massive shift they had in the last 80 seconds or so in Madison Square Garden, protecting a 2-1 lead. And both of them had a tremendous last shift with the game on the line there. And obviously that's part of what you want from a shutdown duo. Klefbom, like, he had one of those games where, like, I didn't really notice him being as proactive as sometimes he is. But at the end of the game, you look at his, you know, stat line and everything, and he had a real solid day's work there in New York, just kind of sticking to his position and getting the puck moving. And that's maybe what you expect to see as a player matures over time is finding ways to contribute to the game without always necessarily being splashy about it. I think Oscar needs to take that step, and that game at least was an encouraging one.
So the only thing I don't like about Klefbom is him on the power play.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced that he thinks the game fast enough, or at least I'd like to see Bouchard try it. I think Bouchard's a better option. He's already the best passing defenseman on the team. Mm-hmm. He's got the coordination, the skill to instantly pick out a guy, and the puck comes to him, just slam. He slams it and it's right on the guy's stick usually. Now he's bobbled it a few times. That's going to happen with a rookie defenseman. He's had some troubles off the rush a few times, Bouchard, but he's a right shot. He can really distribute the puck. He's got great offensive instincts. He should be running that. Just send him out there. And Bruce, he's going to be here in November, December. I don't think they have a better option on their third pairing. And heavens, if he moves up, but I've liked Chris Russell with him. I think he and Chris Russell are that's a solid third pairing. If they could just now, Russell, of course, moved up to play with Nurse. Mm-hmm. And that's a less than solid, maybe not so solid second pairing. But I think Russell's been good. Nurse has been getting better as the games have gone on. Nurse has come on and is skating faster. And I'll just quickly end up with Garrison and Benning. And again, I don't see any reason why either of those guys are in the lineup at this point. You know, Garrison strikes me as too slow for the NHL. And Benning has just been, he's had an up and down trajectory throughout his career, I think often related to injury. He's at a real low point. He's not making any kind of passes or plays. And call up Ethan Bear, man, send him down. Like he's got to get his game together, and they can't afford to have him leaking a goal or two a game.
I saw him good in the early preseason. Then again, I saw a lot of players good in the early preseason when they're playing against other teams, you know, prospects and hopefuls and so on. Benning is, you know, his game is smart, simple, move the puck, get in the way. You know, it's not like he's not a big splashy player by any means, but man, of the very first game, he had a tough last preseason game too against Calgary, the Saturday afternoon game. But the very first game, Taylor Hall hit him with a helmet right in the butt.
Oh yeah,
and then he struggled for the rest of that game, and then the game in Boston was no better, so they press-boxed him. And Chris Russell, for all the many faults that he has, you know, one of the virtues that he has is he's a versatile veteran. And coaches love versatile veterans, and you know what I do too, to some degree, at least some degree, a guy that you can move around left to right, third pairing to second pairing, that's a big switch to do both of those things in one game. Russell went from 17 minutes as Bouchard's babysitter to 22 minutes playing with Nurse in Benning's spot in New York. And by stats, they didn't have a great game, but by eye, they were so much more stable and reliable, that second pairing in Madison Square Garden. And Russell even had some decent moments offensively, even in the offensive zone. And also the first quick pass on the 1-1 goal, that was a five-man goal. It was Russell to Ratty up the boards to McDavid, and then into the zone to Nurse, to Nugent, into the net. All five guys, like I'm sure on your scoring play, you got all five of those guys credited with a positive contribution there. And one of them was Russell, who got the puck in his own blue line, and bang, it was going north. And I'd love to see way more of that out of that guy. I mean, that's been a complaint about him, and a valid one, is that sometimes he hangs onto the puck too long or goes backward with it, right? But that's a play that really you want to see any of your defensemen make. And it worked out in that play. The third pairing, I'm absolutely on board with you on Bouchard on the power play. A, the right-hand stick that they don't have out there. But B, I mean, if you're going to give the guy a 9-game trial, let's see what we got here. I mean, the whole reason they drafted the guy was to do things like run the power play and drive offense from the back end. So where is it? You know,
it's not even on the second unit. I mean,
what's, yeah,
it's like ridiculous. It's
it makes no sense.
What is going on? Like, why not? Why? Who are you going to send out there? Who's the killer bee? You know, that's going to kill the other team. Like, put Bouchard out there. He really does move the puck well. It's kind of weirdly refreshing to see the puck leave his stick and just fly up and hit someone else's stick on the fly. I mean, it just shows how little we've seen that. And Benning has been particularly struggling.
Ethan Bear is the only one in the organization. Like, they do move Bouchard out, it'll be to make room for Bear. And hopefully, you know, I mean, he needs to make a splash down in Bakersfield early. So that's really the competition there. And Bouchard needs to have the first look just because of the 9-game trial thing and the, you know, the lack of options once you do send him out. So we saw that coming the same way as last year. We saw Yamamoto ahead of Puljujärvi. Unfortunately, last year, I'm not sure that worked out well for either player. Hopefully this year's experiment with a fresh draft choice has a happier ending and one, at least one of the guys makes the most of it.
Bouchard in the regular season has been better than Yamamoto was last year in the regular season. Like he's graded out. I don't know what they, you know, he's looked at least average, if not better than average every game that he's played, I thought. And, you know, there have been, again, some glaring mistakes on scoring chances against at least a couple times. He's been whipped down the wing and a couple bobbles with the puck. But I like what I see. Now in net, Cam Talbot essentially cost them the first game, Bruce, as much as anything. I mean, the whole team was bad, but Cam Talbot was one of the worst players in that game with the puck bobble behind the net. But since then, he's been fantastic. He's looked like Cam Talbot of old, and he, so much so that I'm expecting him to play about 70 games this year. Like, unless Koskinen comes in and gets a game and stones him, the coach is not going to roll the dice on Koskinen very much. We're going to see Talbot.
They've already announced Talbot for tomorrow night in Winnipeg. I thought Koskinen, that might be his debut, would be that game. But it'll be Talbot. Win. Yeah, well, they got to win, but they got two goalies for a reason. Like, why pay a guy $2.5 million to wear a ball cap? I mean, hell, I'll wear a ball cap for $250,000 if that's what you're looking for. You know,
I mean, Bruce, I think it might even take. I'm not going to say what your price is, but I think it might be less than $250,000.
Well, I mean, league minimum. I mean, you have to be league minimum. But I mean, you look at Winnipeg where they're going tomorrow, and who'd they throw out there last night on national TV? But Laurent Brossoit. And what did he do but save 42 shots and earn first star honors in his Winnipeg debut as a backup goalie? I mean, you got to use your backup, and you got to hope that he's going to come up and be big once in a while. And, I mean, they're paying him if you just go by paychecks, it's 50-30 should be the split. But already it's 3-0, and you know that Talbot will start the old home opener, then it'll be 5-0. And the longer – it's a trouble with McCollum's reliance on Talbot, it's twofold. Not only do you tire out the starting guy, but the other guy, you know, when he gets in there and it's once every 2 or 3 weeks, well, I guess he's going to be a little rusty, maybe a little jittery. And then he lets in a soft early goal, and then the roof caves in on the guy. We saw it last year. We saw it the year before a little bit, but especially last year.
Now, Koskinen has a no-movement clause, so but maybe they should take – can we send you to Bakersfield for a couple games before you – like, they should plot this out, figure it out. And you're right. Talbot's playing this game. He's going to play home opener. Like, if they can get Koskinen a couple games, more games, like, that might not be a bad idea. But we'll see what happens. And I've liked Koskinen. Like, I like how he looks in Eddie's. He seemed fairly quiet and calm. And I think he might have a good game when he gets in there. I don't think he's, you know, he went from jittery at first to reasonably okay. So let's see what happens.
Anyway, we now know that he'll, when he does get in there, it'll have been over 2 weeks since his last appearance in Germany there, Cologne. And who knows? I mean, the Oilers are playing 3 games a week during the homestand. Maybe they'll wait till the first back-to-back, which is like end of this month. They play, I think, Chicago and Nashville or something back-to-back. But that's a long way off.
Yeah. Well, Bruce, let's leave it there. We got the game coming up, and we've been yakking for a while here. So thanks for talking today.
We do. We've got Winnipeg tomorrow. We'll talk to you after that game. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.